Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Good morning, at least if you're in the UK. This is Lizzie and Justin. We are here, Lizzie, for our 170-somethingth week of our Turning Towards Life conversation, which is, if you're new to us, is an ongoing week-by-week conversation between the two of us that's born out of our work and our partnership in an organisation called Third Space, which you can go and find out about if you like at wearethirdspace.org. And we are so happy. I'm feeling so glad to be doing this week. We are bringing this conversation to you with a wonderful source. We begin every week with a source which we read, and the conversation unfolds in an unplanned, unrehearsed, live and spontaneous way from there. And we're doing this week in the middle of the last day of the third session of one of our year-long coaching programs. So we have been together with our community of faculty and students for the last 3 days, and we have the rest of today to go. And Lizzie, it feels so good to me to be stepping into this conversation from the middle of that big year-long commitment that we're right in the middle of. It's joyful for me that we get to do this in the middle of that, and it feels to me like they're not separate from one another, that this conversation comes from there, and there is shaped by this conversation, as is the way of conversations.
Yeah. And I feel like this source, this poem, is born of the kind of conversations we're in our work with our year-long program. So I'm just going to read, because I think the best bit of the conversation is the after bit, and not do too much preamble. So this is a poem I just wrote this weekend. Who do I become in disappointing? I don't do what's expected. They try and shame me back to my habitual self when I'm trying to be me. But I want to keep the door open to living my life, not the one they envisage for me. As I disappoint others, maybe even my mum, I find a kind of emptiness that's mine to explore. A blank canvas that's inviting me to life, my precious life, the life that's calling to me, and which I know is my path. I sit in stillness to find my ballast. My center propels the noise to the side for now. Now, when I look at life itself, I open to the gifts being bestowed and dedicate myself to listening. And the others might get to live something else that wouldn't come if I keep dancing the dance. And what if by dancing the dance, I'm stealing an experience away that's needed, and which might, with courage, bring untold blessings.
Thank you, Lizzie. So I'm going to read it again. And for all of us who are listening, watching, or maybe you're listening later on our podcast, which is available in pretty much all the places you might expect to find podcasts. Just maybe you're in the middle of doing something else. It might be a moment just to stop and pause and let Lizzie's words in as I read them. Who do I become in disappointing? I don't do what's expected. They try and shame me back to my habitual self when I'm trying to be me. But I want to keep the door open, to live my life, not the one they envisage for me. As I disappoint others, maybe even my mum, I find a kind of emptiness that's mine to explore, a blank canvas that's inviting me to life, my precious life, the life that's calling to me, and which I know is my path. I sit in stillness to find my ballast. My center propels the noise to the side, for now. Now, when I look at life itself, I open to the gifts being bestowed and dedicate myself to listening. And the others might get to live something else that wouldn't come if I keep dancing the dance. And what if by dancing the dance, I'm stealing away an experience that's needed, and which might with courage bring untold blessings.
As with every time, it's so lovely to have this read by someone else and for me to receive it in that way. So one of the things that kind of was a seed of this inquiry for me was when I was little, I got given feedback at school in my reports that I needed to find more descriptive vocabulary other than the word nice. So I used to, you know, I remember doing a textiles project and covering a book with material or something really simple. And I just, they said, the question was, you know, what do you like about your work or something? And I said, oh, it's really nice. And the fabric's really nice and the shape is really nice. And so I think, you know, as with things, when you reflect and look back, the kind of words that we use are such indicators of things. And somehow that then led me to, I was in a group setting when I was quite young, I was must have been in my late teens, and quite a harsh teacher who I didn't really appreciate at the time and still don't really appreciate now, but in some way appreciate because of this. So I wasn't even saying anything, I was just sitting there, and he just said to me, stop being so nice. And I was really wounded and really hurt. And so obviously looking back now with much more capacity and distance from it and everything, I get what he was saying, which is that I think it's a really big thing for me to be a disappointment to people. And so there's all kinds of ways that I have historically not wanted to rock the boat. And then the journey of clumsily learning to rock boats and what that looks like still feels like an ongoing, I don't know, like a central something in my life. And I don't think I'm alone. I think a lot of us have patterns of compliance and doing the thing that's expected of us, because then we get seen positively. And the tricky thing is that what if the thing we are called to, the thing that we really want to do with our lives, rubs anything the wrong way? People who are central in our lives not saying, wow, you're amazing, but saying, what the hell are you doing, is a thing. And it's a thing because, of course, human relationship is such a strong way that we draw our security and we draw our sense of our own self from as well. So what I feel is really necessary for me in this dynamic is to know that who I am is a place to come home to, and that I can really rely on myself, like that I have like a place that's my center that isn't in that dynamic, so that dynamic can be there and I can see it and I can feel it, and it doesn't have me, it's not the thing that drives my decision making, and of course it does sometimes, but I feel like as with all of these themes, to be asking the question and to be wondering is enough of a shard of light in amongst really strong patterns that say there's an opening here. It's not a done deal that this is just what I'm like and that's it. But that to be in inquiry and to ask questions and allow my defences to soften. As I allow my defences to soften, this is the kind of inquiry that comes up. So I could do this and look what all the reactions would be, and I still can do that. So I think it's about relationships really, and knowing that the systems and the relationships that I'm in and the cultural norms of things, you know, even relationships to strangers, it's not just people who are really close to me, but just the world in general, and what everybody thinks everybody should be doing in the world, which of course is a kind of weird, undefinable soup that, you know, they think I should be this, or they think, and we don't know really who the they is. So it's about that too.
Mm. Gosh, I had all kinds of things I thought I might say about this, Lizzie, but of course, up listening to you, it's changing. And this last part that you're saying, that this is all about relationships, seems so important for me, that this isn't just something, it's really important for us to see that the that the patterns we have of holding back what is ours to bring, that we might not know yet and is always evolving, but if we don't bring it, it doesn't get brought into the world. That holding back happens in between us. It's not just something that I'm holding back and you've got no part in it. We're always in this dynamic. And it struck me as you were talking that to be a self is always relational. I don't think that there is a self that's me that's ever completely extricable from the relationships that I'm in. Of course, there are parts of me that are before all the relationships and outside all the relationships, and that sense that you talked about there being a center, like a still center that we can find our way to. I'm really with you on that. And at the same time, we're making ourselves and one another by the interactions we have with one another. And I could feel as you were talking how clear it is to me that there are parts of me that are vested in other people being a particular way so that I can feel okay about myself. So it's one of these really curious dynamics that if somebody I love or who's important to me in some way, maybe not somebody I love, just somebody who's significant to me, shifts a way that they're being and bringing themselves to the world, there will very often be a part of me that goes, stop, stop, stop. And it's actually in me, at least, it's a shame response, which is really fascinating. Like, what has the way your being got to do with me feeling ashamed? And yet somehow it does. And I can feel that shame part, and maybe it's to do with this what one does in our culture, how one should be, that sort of the part of us that is always scanning for, do I fit in? Do I belong? It's not just doing that with me. It's also doing that with that part of me scans people around me to check that you're not going to be in a way that somehow threatens my participation and my safety in the day. And this is really sort of pernicious in a way, because my looking out for how you are is actually nothing to do with how you are. It's everything to do with how you are shapes me and who I can be because of you. And it's really helpful to start to get onto this in ourselves, because your words, which I find so powerful, teach us at once the thing that I learned from, heard this said first time by you, and is very impactful, that holding back ourselves is a kind of stealing. So there's the part of us which goes, can I bring myself, even though somebody else might raise their eyebrows or look aghast or try to stop me or all of that. But it also really helps us to work with the part of ourselves that's willing to let other people be their own way, which also comes back to help us let ourselves be our own way, because we're working then with this whole aspect of us that keeps on trying to keep us on the inside, on the inside of everything that's going on, and is frightened about not being on the inside.
Yeah, that part for me is the kind of, I don't know, like the radical piece of this, which is if I stop doing the thing, which is inadvertently like playing its part in the dynamic, like I'm being a certain way and therefore you're being a certain way. If I stop doing my thing, I might also be opening something up for you, even though it feels like you're disappointed with me. What part of your like unaccessed experience do you get to experience because I stop doing the thing? So if I stop saying yes to you all the time and I start saying no to you sometimes when I don't, it just doesn't suit me, you then have to go, oh, well, what part of me arises when someone says no to me? Liz has never done that before. I don't know how to, this is new. This is new territory for me. So, and it might be really helpful for you to be said no to in some way. And I think that's the inquiry, is like, what do I deprive the other person of by keeping on doing the thing that we've kind of implicitly agreed that gets done around here, which is that I say yes all the time and I comply all the time. And so it feels like a kind of constellatory thing, like when I move my position on the board game, something else has to happen. Sorry, I'm going to sneeze.
That's you.
Yeah, something else has to happen than was happening before, because if the nature of my behavior changes, the way I act changes. It's like two people doing a dance. You know, if my arms are held up in a certain position and we're dancing together, and then I just don't use my arms, you have to do something different because my arms aren't there to hold your arms. So your arms have to do something different. And I guess the inquiry is, well, what am I holding up? And of course, I'll be holding up lots of great stuff by being the way I'm being. But I also know there's things I'm holding up, like as in keeping on going, that aren't healthy by being the way I'm being. And so experimenting and finding that other parts of myself might be more helpful in bringing my gifts, bringing what's mine to bring, might have something to do with other people doing the same, or might have something to do with freeing up a pattern that I'm inadvertently holding together because I'm keeping on doing the thing I've always done. So I think that's the kind of edgy inquiry part for me. It's like, oh my gosh, what if I'm doing something that's deeply opposite to what I intend, which is to keep everything okay? What if I'm disrupting okayness on a really deep level because I'm not allowing the learning to happen that's intended to be learned, because I keep sealing everything closed with being nice or saying yes or complying all the time? What isn't being allowed forth because I keep sealing it up with the same part of me?
So this thing that you're saying is so powerful, that there's you getting to bring into the world the many different parts of you, the many different aspects and qualities and possibilities that are your own. And if they get held back, there's a kind of stealing there. But you're also so brilliantly and eloquently pointing us to that you being a way, a particular way that you are with me, calls forth from me patterns of mine. We mesh with one another, us humans. So your example of saying yes to me does not then allow certain parts of me to show up because of the dynamic. And
yeah,
I think that's a great way of describing this, why we often want other people to stay the way that they are, because when you shift, Lizzie, how you're bringing yourself, it interrupts the familiarity of our interactions, and it calls on different parts of me to show up. And I might feel ashamed of those parts or frightened of those parts, or you know, actually it's a very real dynamic for me that I grew up learning how to fit in, how to not be trouble, how to be agreeable, how to harmonize with people, how to have people like me in that kind of nice way that you're talking about. And so when somebody who is important to me does something like say no, it then calls on the part of me that goes, what do I really want here? Am I just going to go along, or am I going to find a way to express my wishes here? So it's really tender territory. And it's also actually like one of those things where you stand between, we used to have when I was growing up, we used to have a bathroom with a mirror on each wall. And it was the funnest thing that you could stand in the middle and see an infinite chain of reflections going off. I used to love it. But it's really like that between us, because you shift some way that you are, which shifts the dance in me. And of course, something else is evoked in me, which will then shape you, which will then shape me. It's like I'm looking at you, who's looking at me, who's looking at you, that. And it was really striking me as we say how quickly we have ways that we maybe don't even often get to look at to try and put a stop to that pretty quickly. Because just like in a hall of mirrors, there's sort of an amplifying effect. Something can bounce and bounce and bounce and change as it goes. There's also a sort of dampening effect that we can get into. And it makes lots of sense for the purposes of easy everyday getting along, that we sort of mesh with one another like cogs in a machine or something. But it doesn't make sense for our own, the unfolding of our lives and the bringing of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really touched by what you said. So much of what we get up to, so much of what we bring has great gifts in it, and something is missing there. And I was thinking about a couple of experiences of mine, formative experiences of being at school after the end of a school assembly, and we were in the big hall where the assembly and everyone else had left, and I spotted that the ceiling looked like spaceships, and I stood there with him and said, "Oh, look, the ceiling looks like spaceships." And we spent a while talking about it, and the first thing that happened after this experience, Lizzie, was he went and told our teacher, our primary school teacher, about this, and she told me off. I don't now really understand what the deal was, but I remember that feeling of, okay, better never do that again. Never bring my creative, interpretive self too much to the fore, because... So we all have those kind of things in our lives. But also, some years ago, I took up kickboxing, which for a harmonizer like me was such an unusual thing to do. And somebody very close to me saying the first thing they said to me was, "Well, that's not very like you." And I could really feel this dynamic there of, okay, time to put myself away, but also this dynamic of, oh, I see, this is about something that's in between us. If I change, you'll change. And if you'll change, I'll change. And let's just try and keep ourselves away from the riskiness of that feeling. Let's not try to be in it too much.
Mm-hmm. I notice as well, when I run your situations through my body and notice the things in my world as well, in the doing of this, I experience loads of feelings. Like, this isn't to say no, for example, or speak up and say this is not on, when normally I would agree or whatever. I notice that I feel like like it really hurts. Because part of me, the part of me, okay, here we go. The part of me that wants to be nice and agreeable is also invested in not hurting people. And in some ways, to be a disappointment in that narrative is to hurt people. And so my not being nice, I interpret as hurtful. And then I feel really, really wounded that I've wounded somebody by not being the thing that they want me to be. So I experience loads of grief and loads of feelings, and I'm just remembering the last time this happened, and I cried and cried and cried and cried, just feeling the separation of it. So I think there's also a joining togetherness that my niceness is in service of. My compliance is in service of connection. And so when I don't say yes and I stand up for something, I feel like ripped. So still standing in that place. And you know, it's like we say about transitioning from one story about who I am to another story about who I am. There's a way that transition has process in it that may well have grief in it, that may well have sadness in it, that may well have taking myself out of this world and putting myself in this world. There's a separation, like a cleaving or something that has to happen. And I feel like that's what my experience of this is when I am a disappointment and I don't do what's expected, I feel like probably I feel more than the person does who's disappointed in me. You know, they feel disappointment, I feel horrific, deep grief. So of course I'm protecting myself from that by being nice and being compliant and not causing trouble. And I know over the years, the part of me that does speak up and that does say that's not okay has become way, 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 way stronger, but there's still grief in it. Like, that's how strong it is. You know, I've been being quite bold lots of my life, but it still doesn't, just because I'm being bold doesn't mean I don't feel grief about it. Because I think that's how deep it runs. And it's a kind of distortion of care in a way. My distortion of care is that I want you to be okay. And if I contribute to anything to do with your not okayness, I feel devastated. So it's really, really strong, like an existential connection thing as well that gets broken when the story that I'm living in of how to be in the world shifts because something else is calling to me, some other growth is calling to me. So letting go of parts of ourselves that have really propped us up is grief-filled. It's how I feel it as grief.
That's really moving to hear you say that, Lizzie. And I could hear in what you were saying that there are at least two different kinds of grief that you talked about. There's the sort of anticipatory grief, it sounds like, about the connection, about the not being in connection. And there's the grief, you just talked about the grief at letting go of a part that's propped you up.
Mm-hmm.
And I could so understand why bawling about it would be the thing. And you, I think I feel fear more than I feel grief, but then I also think I know about myself that fear is very often a protector protects me from grief.
Yeah.
That's a whole sort of other dynamic in me. And I recognize similarities with what you're saying. So you've given really helpful language for me. I was wondering whilst we were talking about, so for me, very often taking a stand in something, saying, no, this is what I think. This is what I feel. This is where I'm standing. And I'm not just going along with the prevailing something that everyone else feels. That has felt more and more like a calling and is always accompanied by fear and grief in the way that you say. The parts of me that go, if I stand here, I'll be abandoned. I'll be on my own. I won't belong. Those parts are still here.
Yeah.
And there's a dignity and nobility about them, and also a deep overdoing it about you know, they're up to good intentions. And I thought your language about that this runs really deep is really helpful, because it might sound like to give up holding ourselves back, for example, to find a way not to dance the dance of everyone's expectations, to risk being a disappointment, which is always the risk of when we choose a place to stand or choose to do something, is that we'll be disappointing. It would be really easy to imagine that somehow we're just meant to overcome that and just feel great about it. Here I am taking my stand and I just feel great and certain and whatever. No, because it's way, way deeper than that.
Yeah.
And it's opening to me that that another move is to really sweetly love and hold the parts of ourselves that are so frightened and so grief-stricken, so that they can feel that they're held. If the only place I'm held, Lizzie, is in my relationship with you, and I worry that that's at stake, which was it, sometimes it could be because of a choice I make or something I say, it's really helpful to know that there's another place that I can rely on, a deeper kind of care and holding. And some of that I just need to, that's a dismissive way to say it. I'm noticing that if I can notice the fear, not as the only thing that's here, but as a part of me, then one move that's available to me is to say, hello, fear, I see you. I'm right here. I know that you're afraid. Rather than I'm just feeling terrified now because I told you what I really thought. To this common pattern, I tell you what I really think and boof, I'm like overwhelmed by fear. No, hello fear, I get your fear and I'm here, and come and be here with me and with Lizzie, so that my fear is here but not the only thing. That I think that's probably a big part of the long path of this, rather than trying to somehow dominate our fear or our grief and make it go away, like we were not affected by our own actions.
Yeah. And also the really tricky thing, I think, is that the reason I was being nice is because in some way, not maybe all of the reasons, but one reason might be that I don't want someone to think something of me that would be really hurtful to me. And then by being a disappointment and not being nice, they actually then say that to me, which is the thing I was protecting myself against. So as in the person who I stop being nice with and saying yes to then says, you're selfish. And then I have to face the part of me that is not okay with me being selfish, because that's what someone's saying to me in their perception of what's happening. So the thing that occurred to me is for their, this language of parts is so helpful. And I think being in relationship with people who really see what your gifts are so helpful too, because then when these things happen and we start shifting, we're in the experience of the grief or the fear or whatever it is. But having people who really see what we're really up to, who don't buy into the same dynamic as the people with whom we're having difficulty, really helps, because they get to then hold us in the place of our good intention around it. So being in the kinds of relationships like this, Justin, where we actually listen to each other for a start and acknowledge each other's goodness, are really helpful when these transitions in our development are happening. Because in a way, they are the space in which our goodness is held. And the parts of us can be seen and held within it too. But it's not the same as the source of the triggering. It's got a different quality to it. That's conscious. That's right. Well, this is what we're here for. We're here to see one another, to listen to one another, and to allow each other to be exactly the way that we are. And that's how we're in service to each other. Having spaces like that so that the other things can happen and can process and we can learn. Because of course we need both. I feel really grateful to all of the horrible learning experiences I've had, because they really hurt lots of the time. I mean, some learning's graceful, and I've experienced that too, but some learning's really awful. Some learning really hurts. Learning how to be different parts of myself, learning how to bring different parts forward that are needed when I don't feel capable, or learning how to stop doing things that really aren't serving me. It's not an easy ride, and yet it's important for that contrast to be there in order to learn, like that creative contrasting feeling of like, this isn't working, is golden, it's wonderful, it's needed, it's in service of our deepening and growth. But to have also relationships that are holding us in our wholeness and seeing our wholeness and our goodness feels so much in service of that being okay too, because it's so much easier to go through and learn if you feel like you're held, rather than feeling like you're doing it all on your own or something.
And it reminds me, as a final thought from me, Lizzie, that what you're saying reminds me that the one side of this, of these words that you've written, is what we do for ourselves to break out, right? To open ourselves to gifts being bestowed, to live something that wouldn't otherwise be lived. And that one of the greatest gifts that we can give to others is to learn how to be with others, the person who can recognize the wholeness of the other person, even as they do that. So I want to say it back that way, because you're bringing it so clearly, that this is not just how I get my life. You're asking us a much bigger question, which is, how do we be the ones who support other people in having their life come through? That's imagine if we all did that for one another.
Oh, well, this has been so, so opening to talk like this with you, Justin. Thank you. And I hope I keep asking these questions always. And thank you for being the space in which I can ask the questions and bring all these things. It's very wonderful. So I think that's where we're going to end for today. And we're going to be back next week again, as usual, normal time on Sunday next week, because we've got nothing happening that disrupts our 9 o'clock UK time schedule. So we'll be back here at 9 o'clock next Sunday with a source that Justin's going to choose for us. And thank you so much for being here with us and for listening and being part of the conversation. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.